Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I am Sam Nifty Delaney. So what? Do you know at the beginning, just as we're about to record, you always go, yeah. Are you ready? And I go, yeah, I'm ready. And then we press record, right? It always reminds me of one of my favourite things on the internet that from the earlier days of online creativity was when someone in X Factor, do you remember? I don't know if you ever used to watch X Factor, but Cheryl Cole, they'd do like the judges' house. I mean, it used to be X Factor around 2010 was one of the fucking funniest programmes you could watch.
Well, that was the glory years of Twitter.
Yeah,
X Factor would be on. Yeah, everyone was watching it, and everyone was being fucking funny about it.
Yeah. I used to get pissed, and people used to. My wife used to sort of try and take the phone off me because I'd get so into it because I was at heat at times. Also, I'd always know like behind the scenes gossip from what was going on
life,
in the house,
wasn't it? Yeah.
And you weren't supposed to like say it, and I'd be like, yeah, like fucking. He's a fucking cutter having it off in the house, by the way. Right, and we'd be like, don't do it. But
he's only got one ball.
Yeah, I've had it checked out. But it was just a tiny thing that someone did around that time because the judges' houses was funny, wasn't it? And what I liked about it was also utterly contrived, and yet everyone, myself included, took it so deadly seriously. It's sort of like the wrestling back in the day. Do you know what I mean? Like Big Daddy and all of that, where you know it's all staged. But nevertheless, you get really emotionally involved in it. And at the judge,
if you're a child.
Yeah, at the judges' houses. Like, Cheryl, they were all funny. But someone just did this thing where it was always awkward because someone had to walk into the living room, into the lounge, and just stand in front of Cheryl Cole or whoever. And they'd have some awkward small talk and then just start to sing in this empty room. Which is always a weird thing, where it's just one person singing to another person, right? I mean,
and I don't think it was their actual houses either, was it?
It was a rented timeshare in fucking Portugal that Simon Cowell had got a deal on. It was very.
No one ever questioned why that happened.
No,
it doesn't make any sense, does it?
But you got to understand as well, like a lot of. I mean, I feel bad and snobbish saying this, but a lot of the morons who watch that show and get really, really into it. They assume that all celebrities live in sort of completely white marble palaces in exotic locations all the time. So you don't really need to explain it because that's how people just visualise what the life of Louis Walsh is like full time. And Sunita is always hanging around at Cal's place in a dress made out of massive palm tree leaves, right?
Yeah.
Right. And some girl comes in. And just goes, and Cheryl Cole was always like, you know, sort of like a lovely, benevolent aunt. Do you know what I mean? Like your mum's mate who's going to look after you. She was like, she's so nice.
She's like that in real life as well.
Yeah, she probably is. She goes, are you ready? And the girl went, I'm ready. Right. And then she started singing. But some funny cunt on Twitter edited it into this really long thing that I couldn't stop watching, whereby they just looped it. So it was Cheryl Cole going, are you ready? And then it cuts to the girl. She goes, I'm ready. And then it cuts back to Cheryl Cole with a long pause. And then she just suddenly goes, are you ready? I'm ready. And then just inserted in sort of awkward bits where they're both, neither of them are saying anything. They're just blinking silently. Yeah. And then after ages, Cheryl Cole goes, are you ready? And she goes, I'm ready. And she never starts singing. And it went on for an absurdly and uncomfortable long time. And I think about it all the time whenever we say to each other, are you ready? I'm ready. Ready?
We won't do that.
Yeah, I'm ready. But it was great, wasn't it? Like Wagner. Mm. Wagner, yeah. Jedward. I mean, yeah. Wagner was the best, though. Oh, apart from, who I've talked about before, Ab Lisa, those two girls that started having a fight with each other.
I've forgotten that.
Oh, yeah, look it up. It's like...
Did they get to the judges' houses? Or
no, no, they just came into, like, is it boot... No, it's not boot camp. It's whatever the... Or the first bit is where they
just
all
the
turn
the audition,
up,
wasn't it?
Yeah, where everyone just fucking rocks up. And these two girls walk on, quite young, and they start singing, and it's shit. And then Simon Cowell gives them, like, some harsh feedback. And one of them just...
Are you going to say Simon Cowell gives them 100 quid if they'll fight?
Yeah, well, I think that's the true story of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, listen here, girls. You're absolutely awful. You're ghastly. But I can see a role for you on this week's episode. Here is £100 that Sunita...
Between you?
That my assistant, Sunita, is going to hand you in an envelope. Right, in return... No, no, it's not yours yet. She's just dangling it there. What you need to do to get your hands on this £100, girls, is to fight each other. Have a bitch
and
fight.
And I will put it on ITV.
Yeah.
You'll be in all the newspapers.
And the ad revenue will be immense. Right. Yeah, so basically, they came on, they did a shit song, Cow slagged them off, and one of them did the classic sort of, yes, Sir Ellen, thank you for the feedback, Sir Ellen, that kind of response that people do on reality shows, which is what you're supposed to do. But the other one's gone, fuck that, what do you fucking know? Like, literally something like that, giving it the what do you fucking know, you're a fucking idiot, yeah. Or something like that, right? And Simon's just sort of rolled his eyes and shrugged, oh, God, how ghastly, get them off, right? But the other one of the pair is so annoyed at her mate for being so rude that she says, don't talk to him like that. And then she fucking lamps her one in the side of the head. And then the other one lamps her back. And they just they have a fight. And that's it. And then basically that's what entertainment was, or I don't know if it still is, but... Yeah, it's basically Simon Cowell paying the working classes to fight on primetime television Saturday night.
I don't know if it's still the same now, but the audition element of it used to be, let's laugh at mentally disadvantaged people.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's it.
For all our entertainment.
That is, it did become basically that. But, you know, we were all complicit because I was fucking loving it. I was clapping.
Oh, we loved it.
I was clapping and laughing like an idiotic seal throughout the whole thing.
Well, that was it because we weren't
the whole ghastly spectacle.
We weren't as woke back then as we are now.
That's true.
Nowadays, we'd immediately go, well, that's just laughing at people who are mentally subnormal.
Do you know what, though? Look at that. That's only 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And people, come so far. People go, and when I say people, I mean even like, you know, me and you sometimes will go, like, oh, fucking hell, it's all gone a bit far. Like, we'll moan about our daughters lecturing us nonstop about being politically incorrect and all this stuff. But actually, what it results in is progress. And the, you know, the vanguard of any movement is usually very extreme. It has to be revolutionary. It has to fucking just break shit and be mad, right? So what you see is people at the vanguard being sort of insanely politically correct, and it even upsets generally liberal blokes like us. We're like, oh, fuck's sake, calm down. Stop lecturing us on everything.
Yeah.
Like, I can't say anything nowadays, right? But ultimately, if the people at the very front are fucking like behaving like that, the trickle down means that quite quickly, even normal society becomes 10 to 20% more polite and kind and considerate is probably the word.
Yeah, good. I mean, I think that's kind of what we're doing on this podcast.
Well, I don't think that we're quite at the vanguard of political correctness, to be fair. So, I think we're like at best somewhere in the middle.
Are we not agents for social change then? Is that not what this is?
Well, I think that we might be playing a small role, but I'm saying the people at the fucking front who are bulldozing down, what do you call it, barriers, right?
Yeah.
These are the what we would call almost nutters who will, like, they're having a go at you for just, they're the thought police, right? Mm. They're extreme political correctness. They would hate this podcast, right? But what I'm saying is, If you go,
you just never hear it.
If you go 110% one way, then society might fall behind and just be 40% that way.
Yeah.
And that leads to a general improvement. So, like you say, X Factor was the biggest show. I used to say it was as big for a period as the Premier League. Those were the two biggest things in terms of our culture and society entertainment. The Premier League and X Factor. And it was similar in that it crossed all... It crossed gender, class, age, region, everything. Everyone was fucking talking about it, right? Now, I don't know. Does it still exist? Did they change it? I don't know.
Did they change what?
X Factor.
The X Factor. I don't even know if it's still on.
I don't know if it's still on.
But speaking of morons and ITV, I found myself watching Family Fortunes last night.
Isn't it Gino Giannelli does it
Gino
now?
Gino De Campo's doing it now.
Gino.
The man who burgled Paul Young.
I know.
20 years ago.
I can't believe.
What kind of a message does that send out?
Not a good one, right? Because it shows that this society rewards crime. Because what kid doesn't grow up dreaming of one day presenting Family Fortunes? I know I did. I'll be honest. I mean, it's embarrassing. I'm 45. I'm bald. I'm past it. But the flame still flickers somewhere, right?
Yeah.
That maybe I, one day, maybe if it was dropped by ITV and ended up on like some obscure digital channel, like what do they, like, is it Challenge TV or something like that?
Challenge TV, yeah.
And that like their budgets were slashed, then maybe still Delaney might get the call, right?
Mate, I often think there's loads of stuff on those shitty little channels that me and you would do a proper fucking job on.
Yeah, well...
We just haven't been asked
if
yet.
If you're listening, Sir John Challenge TV, right? But, you know, at the end
Not
of the day,
just
mate...
That,
at the end of the day...
Those ones where fucking cunts go around
on
the countryside
train
and look at stuff.
Oh, I'd love that. That's my dream job, man. I mean, I'll be honest. The thing is, the lifestyle we have doing this podcast, right, is... I mean, the idea of going... I've never... In my experience of making TV, I've always hated filming. And that is why, ultimately, I'm not cut out for it. That was why, ultimately, I got sacked from that Crime Invasion UK show that Raggy Omar ended up nicking off me, right?
Yeah.
It was for a lot of reasons. One was that I refused to be at all racist. That's the positive. That reflects well on me. But the thing that reflects negatively on me is that, if I'm honest, I fucking hate filming. I hate it, right? I hate the process of filming. I don't find it exciting or glamorous in the least. I find it depressing and boring, right? And so I was really kind of unhelpful in the process of making it, because I just wanted, right, let's do the next bit. Right, I was impatient and wasn't willing to like basically do the film. What do you mean you've got to do another shot? I just done that. I'm not doing it again.
Yeah. I did it brilliantly.
Hey, I was going home now. It's 5:30. I'm going home for my dinner. Well, we just need to film a bit longer. No, fuck off. Right, so it was because I hated it, and I hate it in a studio. I hate it especially out and about. I fucking hate it. So the idea of having to leave my home rig where I sit now podcasting with you in my tracksuit, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe, you know, going downstairs, having a cup of tea afterwards, right? Having to exchange that for going out, COVID or no COVID, putting on potentially not just clothes, but a suit, which I very often would wear on TV. Putting on a suit, ironing shirt, getting in a fucking taxi. I hate riding in taxis. I mean, boo-hoo, by the way. I fucking know. Oh, yeah. Fucking hard life, Delaney, you cunt, right? I'm just saying, that aside, look, I am a cunt, yeah. But that, all of that, me being a cunt aside, right, it'd have to be something special. But that special thing is anything where I get to just wander around looking at things outdoors. That, to me, if it's just on those things, if it was Andy and Sam look at stuff on the Discovery Channel, count me. Yeah, I mean, I would do that. I'd do it more or less unpaid. We could do
a version of Mortimer and Whitehouse Has Gone Fishing, but where we just go around looking around scrapyards.
Gone digging.
Or car boot sales.
What about gone digging?
Yeah.
Scrapyards would be good. Britain's best recycling plants, or Britain's best dumps. Do you know what I mean? Because you've talked to me a bit about your dump up in Sunderland, and I'm fascinated now because I've only ever actually been in my life to one dump.
Yeah.
And like,
you know how the other people dump.
Yeah, I would like to know that, because I've always thought, my one's pretty good. Because even the one I go to now is even the one we went to in a kid, because we'd drive across borough lines to go to the good one. Because
next
we lived
time
in
we
the
go
borough-
on tour.
Yeah, we should check them
next
out.
Next time we go on tour, we'll just find a bag of stuff and just... We'll empty out a bin in the street into a black bag and then just take it to the dump.
Yeah, no.
And ceremoniously
no, and
dump something.
Have to, wherever we go as well, we'll have to... We're quite good at accents, so we'll have to adopt the local accent. Because if not, that's something that they'll check, because they'll go, you out of town. Like, say, imagine if you rocked up at a dump in Liverpool and they worked out that you were a Macan and I was from London. They'd be like, eh? It's like scouse rubbish you got there. And we'd have to be like, course of this? What other kind of rubbish is it going to be, you dizzy? It better be.
You haven't come up from London with that, have you?
Nah, I would bring fucking cockney rubbish up here, contaminating our rubbish. What do I look like? Scum. That's the worst crime you can commit in this great city.
Oh, God. But getting back to Family Fortunes, fuck me. It was just a complete display of fucking stupidity from start to finish. It's an hour long now. It used to be fucking 30 minutes.
Mm.
And it was a tight 30 minutes, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? The format was fucking
There was
tight
no,
as fuck.
There was no fat on it. Yeah.
There's no fat on it at all. Now you've got fucking little videos at the beginning about the families that are on it.
Who cares?
Introduce themselves. You've got Gino fucking interviewing them. The round at the end, the round for the grand prize, they discuss their fucking answers that they've given afterwards. And fuck me.
You know
what? The lowest point, this is the maddest 2 minutes of television I think I've ever seen, right? And it'll be on ITV Play or whatever it's called. Go and have a look at it from last night. One of the questions was, we asked 100 people, what is a thing that a dog would do that a human wouldn't be able to get away with doing? And there was various answers, and at one
eating
point,
eating its own shit is obviously the top
answer.
That
was something like that. Yeah, urinating in public was like the top answer.
Fucking on someone's leg.
This was it. The answers were running out basically, and one of the contestants says, "Humping a cushion or someone's leg."
Yeah.
And Gino De Campo was like feigning ignorance and going, humping?
Oh, fuck.
And he went, yeah.
Turn it
and
in,
then Gino
De
Campo, in the middle, in front of the fucking question area, right in the middle of the set, starts simulating dog sex. This is 8:25 on a Sunday night, the date of our Lord,
mate,
on ITV.
I'm not going to sound racist, but this is why you cannot let Italians host British game shows.
I thought that I didn't want
that.
To say it.
They will fucking do that, right? They will start humping if you fucking give them a chance.
It gets worse.
Right.
It gets worse, right? So De Campo's simulating dog sex. The audience are in uproar, right? And then they go to the next member of the family for their answer, and it's a fella, and they ask him, and he says, "Can I just do something?" And he takes his girlfriend's hand, who's the next contestant him, and he leads her out into the middle of the arena where De Campo's just been doing dog sex 30 seconds before. He gets down on one knee and he proposes marriage to her.
Oh, my God. What? So no fucking build-up or context. Just like, all right, cunts, I'm about to do something here.
Watch this. Yeah,
oh,
and he just leads her out.
God.
And he gets on one knee and he proposes marriage to her. I mean, there's nothing worse than the public marriage proposal.
No.
Because the recipient, almost always the woman, is duty-bound to fucking say
because of the
scenario.
It is a wedding. You know, like we said recently, that if someone invites you to renew their wedding vows, it means that one of them's definitely 100% been caught fucking someone else, right?
Yeah.
It's a similar rule with public fucking. It doesn't mean that they've been caught fucking, but what it is you know that is a doomed marriage.
Yeah.
If it begins with a public proposal, it is a doomed marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an element of control there that needs to be
and eradicated. If you're listening to this and thinking, wow, I proposed to my spouse publicly and we're still happily married. Yeah, well, fucking enjoy it while you can, mate, because your marriage is doomed. It might seem happy now, but
it's
fucking doomed and it's built on fucking sand.
Sorry to break it to you,
but it's fucking true.
So, obviously, she said yes. So that was just the most mental fucking 2 minutes of telly I think I've ever seen. Family Fortunes last night. And
well, it just reeks, saying... of, it reeks of desperation. It reeks of desperation, things like that, because it's stuff.
Oh, it was
whether
awful.
Whether it's Gino Ginelli doing like a dog sex time, right? Or it's fucking proposals. It reeks of desperation. But when you had your Monkhouse fucking presenting it, do you think he would have stood for that kind of thing? That would eat into his fucking gag time, right? It'd be like,
exactly.
You fucking cunts. Listen, he would say this. This is what Monkhouse would have said. He would have said, listen, this is show business. People are tuning in to watch me, a consummate showman, entertain them. These other cunts that you fucking wheeled in, right? These muggles off the street. They're props, right? They're stooges.
They're wallpaper.
They're there for me to use as comedy props and stooges.
The only value in this show is the last 5 minutes where they might win 10 grand.
Yeah.
And that's where they're coming to play. The rest of it is just about me and me gags.
It's me. I mean, we could just as easily just call it Bob Mangashar, come on and just like start doing my funnies, right? Fuck all this other shit. No one wants to see that. I'm not, can you imagine a producer saying, Bob, we've got this funny little bit where someone's going to say humping. Yes. And you're going to pretend at first you don't know what humping is. Right. But then you are going to, you're going to realise what humping is and you're going to start miming it. And Monkhouse's like, listen, cunt, right? Look at this. You know what this is? This is my joke book. I've got about 1,000 fucking jokes on any fucking subject you can dream think of. God, ask me anything, right? Tadpoles, right? Hang on a second, turn to the T page. Yeah, well, how many tadpole jokes you got? I got the lot, right? I've been working on my act since I was about fucking 3 years old, right? I'm a legend, right? People would watch me read out the fucking telephone directory, right? You're working with
and
a master.
And they've been rolling in the aisles.
A master of fucking show business, right? And you fucking squirt, have the temerity to come here and tell me to fucking fill a 1 minute segment of this half hour show, waste it on pretending to have dog sex. Are you out of your fucking mind? I am calling Michael Grade now, right, to have you fired and blacklisted from the whole television industry.
Jalapeño.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jalapeño.
Gino Ginelli's like, yeah, sound good. Sound good, yeah? I do the humping bit, no problem at all.
I do anything for money.
You want me to cook some spaghetti on this one? I wouldn't mind, but I don't even think he's a decent cook. I mean, you know.
Do you reckon?
He'd boil up a bit of spaghetti and chuck a fucking jar of pasta sauce on it. He doesn't even
some
make
prawns,
most of
it.
I don't like, yeah, I don't like his cooking. And, you know, obviously the burglary is probably...
I don't like any TV cooking, Sam. I don't like any
fucking TV cooking. I tell you
the
what...
The idea of... Go on.
I tell you what, right? I know you don't like it. I really like it when, but only when. It's not never to do with the food. It is to do with the personality of the chef, right? So I could watch Nigella. I've never cooked a Nigella recipe, I don't think, in my life, right? But Nigella is so wonderfully strange. She is a strange character. She is the sort of character that you want on TV, right? It's a throwback to the golden age showbiz where you're only allowed on TV if you're exceptional. Now, they kind of want everyone to be normal. Oh, just like me. I don't want someone to be like me. I want them to be fucking marvellous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, be extraordinary.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And Nigella is an extraordinary person who is fucking weird. Like, she's just talking and then she'll just all of a sudden stop and look all weird with, like, goggle eyes at the camera with a smile, laughing at a joke that she is the only one. I mean, it's like, they might, you know, she reminds me of in her mannerisms. It's hard if you don't know the bloke, but some of you might feel you do. She reminds me of Pancho from the Flats. Because when you're talking to Pancho from the Flats, right, you are aware that there is a separate conversation going on in his mind that only he is aware of.
Yeah.
And he responds to that while you're in a normal conversation with him. And you're sort of like, that's weird. He just giggled out of the blue for no reason, right? And it's because he's having a separate conversation. He said, that's like
internal
Nigella.
Conversation. Yeah, now, internal dialogue.
I've mentioned before that I've got this subscription masterclass, right, that I got last Christmas. I've got a 2-for-1 deal. And sometimes I dip in and out of the lessons on. They've got so many incredible lessons, right? So my favourite one is the former FBI negotiation chief teaching you the art of negotiation. That's brilliant. and they got loads of other ones. The other night, I watched Gordon Ramsay teaching you how to make mashed potatoes, or as he calls it, pomme puree. Right? Now, I was watching him do his thing, right? And my wife came in and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm watching fucking Gordon Ramsay making mashed potato, aren't I? And she went, oh, fucking Gordon Ramsay. I said, I'm not going to lie. I could watch Gordon Ramsay do this all fucking day because he is so mad and strange. He even looks strange now, right? He's like super muscly and he keeps referring to his muscles as well, which I find brilliant and hilarious, right? He's going, look at these forearms. No wonder I'm good at mashing potatoes. I mean, are you serious? Jesus, look at them, right? But he is mad. He is so mad. His mannerisms are mad. The things he says are mad. His intensity. He's so intense. Like, you think, oh, now he's just obsessed with being a celeb, which I'm sure he is. He's the sort of man who adores fame. But you see him in the kitchen and you think the reason he's still on top of his game in his industry is that he is, like, absurdly obsessed. And, like, you're watching some. In a way, it goes back to what we're saying about X Factor in a way. You are watching someone with a sort of a mental illness of a sort, which is sort of OCD. Like, he'll be arranging his knives and rearranging them constantly, and he'll break off from what he's saying because he's trying to explain something to you. And it's not really edited like a TV show because it's just a straightforward, here is a video. Yeah. And he's just like, he'll sort of break off from a really important bit of the recipe and just sort of zone out and stare at his knives and start moving them around in different positions because you know he's got fucking OCD. And a lot of chefs are because they have to be so organised and disciplined.
Yeah.
And he'll be doing like weird shit and like wiping counters down. And he's just a strange, eccentric man. So I know you don't like cookery on TV because a lot of it just seems pretentious. But for me,
it's not that. It's all in the personality of the chef. Well, yeah, but it's not that. It's like they're cooking something, right? So you need to be able to taste it and smell it.
Mm.
And you can't do any of that. It's like we've cooked something and here it is. You can look at it.
Yeah.
That's all you're getting. Fuck off. I'm not
my
interested.
Dad said that to me once when I said that I was into watching, I can't remember what cookery show it was. It was probably my favourite ever is Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares. Like, right. It is so funny. It's one of the funniest fucking programmes.
That's the thing. I mean, Gordon Ramsay's basically based a fucking career on workplace bullying.
Yeah. But it's entertaining, you know, to watch.
It's like, it might have been great 10 years ago, but in our new woke environment, I'm not fucking having it.
You should see him in the USA one, though, because there's a lot
I have seen it. My son watches clips of it on YouTube and thinks it's fucking great.
Yeah, because in the USA, a lot of them, in the British one, some of them were very timid because they were very British. And he just went in and he was a proper walks into the room and goes, all right, cunts, right? And then just starts cunting them all off. It's quite harsh. In America, it's a bit funnier because in America, first of all, they all have to call him Chef Ramsay, which is just amusing. But also, you get a lot of guys who are wannabe tough guys. So he rocks up in places. There'll be like a tough guy in New York who thinks he's a little bit Tony Soprano. And he starts trying to talk back to Ramsay. So Ramsay has to ramp it up further. And it goes fucking bananas at times. And it is entertaining. I mean, I just think he's a madman. But my dad has the same attitude to you. I told him once and he went, what? Cookery shows? And I was like, yeah. And he looked at me with like utter disgust and contempt. And he went, a person cooking on television, you like watching that, do you? And I was like, yeah. And he went, he said something like pathetic, right? Which is basically how my dad speaks to me about everything.
It's a catchphrase, isn't it?
Pathetic. And I was like, why is it pathetic? I like it, right? And he's like, well, it's like...
learn about cooking.
It's like pornography, isn't it? He goes, you're watching it. You're never going to do it. You can't hear it. You can't taste it. You're just watching it and like voyeuristically taking pleasure in something that someone else can do. And I was like, and it's the same pathetic reasons people watch porn. I'm thinking, yeah, you dirty bugger. I bet you've had been on it. I mean, his generation, they didn't watch porn because you'd only get it if you were willing to go into a CD shop in the red light district. It's a bit of a hassle.
Yeah, they could just get out your phone within 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, getting back to Family Fortunes, I'm not saying that people are a lot thicker than they were 10 years ago or 12, 30 years ago when Monkhouse was doing it. But the scores last night was Family 1 got 492 points, Family 2 got 49. That's how fucking bad it was.
Is it?
And also the bit at the end where you've got the five questions to answer for the jackpot.
Yeah.
They now get 20 and 25 seconds instead of 15 and 20 seconds to answer those five questions. And that's because people are 5 seconds thicker than they were 30 years ago.
Who are the best three presenters ever of Family Fortunes in order?
Well, there's only been three that's been any good. You've got Monkhouse, who's number one.
Yeah.
You've got Les Dennis at number three.
Yes.
But you've got Max Bygraves at number two for comedy value.
Yeah.
Because he was so fucking useless at it.
Yeah. It was brilliant. But he had a catchphrase, which was big money.
Big money.
And he would shake his hands.
You need hands.
He was a big cockney, wasn't he, Bygraves?
Yeah.
Big money. I don't know why they thought of him to do it, but it was a bit of a Danny Dyer presenting the wall sort of a move.
It was. It was a left field choice, wasn't it? It might have worked, it might not have, but they got a couple of years out of him.
No, but I totally agree. I think those are the top three.
I mean, it was it Vernon Kay that did it when it came back? Fuck off.
I never watched Vernon Kay. I don't mind Vernon Kay. I think he's all right, but I'd fallen out of love with the show by then.
I don't know if anyone else did it in the meantime, but no.
But Ginelli is a low point for the show.
DeCampo, you mean?
Yeah.
Gino Ginelli's an ice cream, isn't it?
I know, I just like calling him that, though. Gino Ginelli.
Well, this takes me back to one of the worst. Getting back to Nigella, though, I heard her on 5 Live the other day, and I tuned in midway through the interview, and she must have a bit of a cough or something, because her voice was really hoarse.
Yeah.
And I didn't recognise her, and I thought, who the fuck is this? She's fucking mental.
Yeah, she's completely mad.
And it was like you
mad.
Were saying...
She's
and at the end, it was like,
mad.
Thank you, Nigella. And I went, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, she's completely mad. What I do think's interesting, though, and I suppose I've got to be careful legally, but fuck it, is when she was in quite a long, messy divorce case with her ex-husband, Charles Saatchi, right?
Yeah.
A lot of shit came out. Like, he played dirty, right? And a lot of shit came out. And she had a couple of personal assistants who turned on her in court, right?
And they alleged,
which she denied, that she was non-stop on the iron filings, right? Non-stop on the iron filings. And they had all these stories like everywhere when they were tidying up the house or into her pockets, there was always rolled up notes. She would sometimes borrow money off of them if she didn't have cash to get it. And anyway, I'm sure she denied this and it was just an allegation. But what I found interesting is that when I read it, I was absolutely astounded because I thought, fucking hell, this is quite a big allegation, right? It's a class A drug and she is a bit of a national treasure, right? Mm. So suddenly finding out that she is allegedly, if you think of the way the press treat other people, like, I mean, I'm struggling to think of a thing now, but, you know, like someone who's just been caught having a toke on a spliff, right? Mm. Sometimes we'll get monstered by the press. And I like Nigella. I don't wish like harm on her. And actually, if she did have a drug problem, again, my personal view is people with a drug problem deserve only sympathy and care, right? Mm. Never condemnation or judgment. However, it was interesting to me that a story comes out where they're going, you know, Nigella, who plays this sort of character who is a domestic goddess, who has the perfect family, the perfect children, it's always throwing wonderful dinner parties and all the rest of it, you know, the ultimate fucking bourgeois dream, right?
Yeah.
Is fucking shoveling it up her nose like fucking nobody's business non-stop. Here's the good example. Daniela Westbrook, right? Daniela Westbrook.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Oh, Daniela Westbrook. Whoa, look at her. Whoa, what a coke whore. Fucking hell, her nose has collapsed, right? Nigella fucking got away with it scot-free. Now, it might not be true, of course, right?
But the point is, I felt that that was a big revelation that got like one hit in the papers and then was brushed aside. And I think it was because she's posh.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Absolutely, no question about it. Yeah.
It just doesn't
Daniela fit. Daniela works as a whipping boy, if you like.
Mm.
Someone that can just knock about in the tabloids because they've got no investment in her. Mm. They've got no emotional investment. They've got no financial investment. But Nigella appears in her books are serialised and all the big fucking broadsheets. She does columns and shit like that. She's one
also,
of them.
Also, it doesn't quite fit with an easy narrative, like for the audience. It's like they can make an easy story that's not difficult to understand where you go, here we go, we have cast this working class actress who used to be in a soap and now we can easily portray her as being washed up and desperate.
She's had loads of money. She couldn't look after her money properly. Yeah. She's working class and she doesn't know how to
just
do
like
that.
Just like they do to Raheem Sterling and all the footballers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then they go, yeah, this is an easy narrative. Everyone gets it because it's this cliche. It's a story they've heard a million times before. And we can only really deal in cliches. We can't tell more complicated stories than that. But Nigella, this is the opposite of the life that she is presenting. Now, if it were true, not saying it is, probably isn't, just want to get that on the record, but I'm just talking now in an abstract sense. Mm. The correct thing to do is, when people switch on the TV and they see someone living this Nigella lifestyle, right, in this perfect home, and she's always rocking up in a black cab back from wherever the fuck she's been, and I've just picked up a few essentials on my way home. She's like, she's kept the motor running, the meter going on a fucking cab. She's jumped out at a fucking deli, right, done a wanna on a load of fucking mozzarella and other shit, right? More than you'd do in your weekly big shop, but just for that night's tea, right?
Yeah.
The motor's still running, so factor that costing as well. She's jumped back in, then she's got back to her fucking really nice home, right? And it's immaculate. There's nothing. There's kids there, but don't worry about that. There's no toys out or fucking shit, right? There's no gormless kids sat in front of the PlayStation. They're all like doing their fucking homework or whatever. Fuck knows who's been looking after them. The nanny, right? And she's going, oh, I've got some pals coming over. Oh, pals are they? Yeah, two Booker Prize winners, a poet, the head of the fucking BBC, right?
Roald Dahl.
Roald Dahl, right? Tom Stoppard. Right, all the cunts, right? They're all coming round. It's going to be fucking awesome. And I've only thrown it together. It wasn't even a big plan. It's a Tuesday night. It's just happened. We were on the WhatsApp group. Said, come round mine for dinner, right? So they've all come round and she's
not... That's not dinner, it's supper.
Fucking supper. Fuck me. And so she's knocked it together. They've all come round. And then you see them all having a great time. They're drinking, but not to excess. They're not getting pissed up because they're middle class, right? Now, the problem is, with all of that, and this is not inverted snobbery. What it is that by presenting that picture as quite normal and easy, you're piling a lot of pressure onto other people because they watch it and they think, fucking hell, my life's not like that, but that's how my life should be. Well, no, because the lifestyle she is leading, right, in West London is that of someone who is not just a millionaire, someone who has several million pounds, almost an endless amount of money, right? But they present it as almost normal. It's not called How to Live Like a Millionaire. It's just called Nigella Eats. It's like, this is just how you can eat. I mean, it's a really simple way to cook. It's a really simple way to live, right? Just get a cab home, stop at the deli, pick up some fucking imported mozzarella, invite fucking Mariella Frostop round, make a cocktail, fucking bingo. Night sorted, right? But you're fucking sat wherever the fuck it is, you know, maybe you're a single parent or whatever. Even if you're not, even if you are a middle class person with a good job, right? That is an out of reach fucking lifestyle that involves lots of pressure and a load of unrealistic fucking financial equations, right? And you're on the GAC, right? You're a parent and you're like, I'm fucking struggling to be a good parent. But to be honest, I'm so exhausted that when I do have a moment to myself, I end up having a fucking bottle of wine and like half a gram of gear just to fucking make the most of the tiny amount of time I have that is not fucking working or looking after kids. But then I feel awful about it and it's probably just me and I could never admit to any of it because I'm full of shame, right? And I feel that people will judge me. The right thing to do would be for Nigella to come out and go, listen, right, hands up, confession time. I know I've been making out like I've lived the fucking perfect lifestyle, but guess what, cunts? That perfect lifestyle does not exist. No one lives it. It's impossible.
even if you've got a bottomless bit of money, it is impossible, both financially and spiritually, right, to live a life like that. And guess what? I'm so busy and tired, and I put so much pressure on myself, and I'm so involved in the fucking relentless fucking hamster's wheel of fame, right, and attention, and I've got so much shit on, and I'm so fucking anxious about losing it all, that basically I've fallen into the habit of just doing coke morning, noon and fucking night, right? I am shoveling it up there like fucking Quo in the 80s, right? Call me, my mates call me fucking Rick Parfitt for a joke, right? I am fucking bag on it, up my ass, up my nose, through my eyeballs, any which way but loose. I fucking love the stuff. And, you know, it's a shame, and I feel bad because I'm also a mother, a wife. I have responsibilities, but look, this is some way the way life goes. So what I'm saying is don't beat yourselves up about it, cunts. Get help. That's what I'm doing. I'm making myself accountable, right? That's what she could have said, if it was true, which it isn't. But I'm just saying, think of her as an abstract symbol of the what I'm trying to discuss. But instead, she denies it, right? The papers sweep it under the carpet. And poor old Westbrook, in the meantime, where's she? Doing fucking panto in bloody Milton Keynes.
And or not having to even pull out of it halfway through. Yeah. She can't cope with it.
Because of the pressure.
Because her fucking head's done in. Yeah. Yeah, well, there you go. That's life logistics for today. We didn't get right to answering any of your questions, but I like to think we've maybe imparted some kind of advice.
Yeah, I mean, it is in a way. It's like, don't put pressure on yourself. Watch those shows, but no, it's just the same as watching fucking, what's that one where Mickey Mouse is a wizard?
Fantasia.
Yeah. Look at it like that, right? That watch those shows in that spirit, right? Or think of it as watching like Vic and Bob. It's sort of a surreal comic presentation.
It's not real.
It is not a real thing. So don't think that that's how you should be carrying on.
Oh, God, I was just thinking back to Family Fortunes last night. One of the questions was, thinking of Mickey Mouse, one of those jackpot questions that you got to answer quickly was, name a cartoon animal. What would you say?
Mickey Mouse.
You've just said Mickey Mouse, or you could say Donald Duck, or the top answer was Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
First fella, name a cartoon animal. He says lion.
Lion who?
And then his sister, when she did it, name a cartoon animal. A cat.
A cat. Was it Roy Moraes Jr. on there? A cat. Meow.
Cartoon cat.
That was like the legendary anymore, ones, but I don't know if they're true or urban myths that they claim where they used to do compilations of the funniest ever answers. Yeah. Name a bird with a long neck, Naomi Campbell.
Yeah.
And the other one was real. Name a dangerous race, and they reckon someone went, the Arabs. But I'm not sure if either of them check out, because neither of them sound like questions that would legitimately be posed. Like, name a dangerous race. I can't name a real life dangerous race. Well,
I think they've come from a stand-up comedian set somewhere at some point.
Yeah, yeah, okay, but, fair enough.
There we are, that's it. Top Flight Time Machine Life Logistics. Get your questions in. We'll try and answer some next time.
Yeah.
TTFN.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.